Thank you for downloading this VintageRadioShows.com podcast. We have over 25,000 shows for you to download and enjoy, with membership starting at only $6.95 per month. And now VintageRadioShows.com offers FTP access to make collecting your favorite shows quick and easy. Please visit us at VintageRadioShows.com.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. Horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents
X minus one.
Volpla by Wyman Gwyn. Now, X minus one and Volpla.
Lunch, dear.
Oh, I'll be right there.
Old hermit, I have a buffet on the terrace.
I'm coming. So, I'm an old hermit, am I? And our daughter says I'm eccentric now. I wonder how the devil she ever found out.
From me, of course.
Mm-hmm. But you love me just the same.
Oh, Max, what's got into you? Stop it.
Well, I reached the dangerous age. And, lady, I'm going to have fun.
Well, come on out to the terrace. The hamburgers will get cold.
My dear, I'm going to have a new kind of fun.
Oh?
It's a joke. I'm going to play a tremendous joke on the whole world. I had been working for this moment for 10 years, and now, Volplas, three of them, a male and two females. I had called them Volplas since that day 10 years ago when I got the idea of creating a flying mutant, which I would teach to feed, play, and talk. Now I was almost ready to play my joke on the world. After lunch, when I returned to the lab, the Volplas were moving about on the mattress where I had placed them, and the male was trying to stand. They were about 28 inches high. Except for the face, chest, and belly, the Volplas were covered with a soft, almost golden down. The skin was pink. Upon his head and across his shoulders, the male had a shock of fur as soft as a chinchilla. The cranium was in the same proportion to the body as it is in the human. And they were shockingly human-eyed. When the male spread his arms, the span was 48 inches. I held his arms out and tried to tease the spars open. These spars turned backward and ran alongside the wrist almost to the elbow. Powerful wrist muscles could snap them outward and forward. Suddenly, as I teased the male Volpla, this happened. The spars shot outward, adding 9 inches to each side of a span. The lateral skin, that had until now been resting in folds, was tightened into a golden plane that stretched from the tip of the spar to his waist. A true gliding plane. Perhaps even a soaring plane. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, they were ready for their first solid food. Come on now, here. Hold the cup. That's the way. Hold the cup. Oh, you're a beauty. Hey, you're all beauties. No. Come on. Hey, don't climb on my back. No, stop. Oh, that's better. Oh, hello, pretty one. Hello.
Hello.
So that's the way it's going to be, eh? Hello.
Hello.
What Wonderful, wonderful. Oh, you have no idea what I have in store for you, my dears. I will teach you a language, perhaps English, or simple basic English. You will have your own crafts, and you'll live in small tree houses, and I'll teach you legends that you came from the stars, that you watched the red men and the white men, and you listened to their speech. And when you're able to take care of yourselves, I'll turn you loose. There'll be Volpla colonies up and down the coast before anyone suspects. And then, my dear, one day, somebody will see a Volpla, and the scientists will observe them. Then, the legends will come. Isn't that funny? Don't you think that's terribly funny? I used the metabolic accelerator to cut the Volpla's gestation down to 1 week, and I used it to bring the infants to maturity in 1 month. By the next spring, I had a colony of over 100 Volplas, and I shut down the accelerator. From now on, they could have their babies in their own way. I had devised a language for them, and I carefully adulterated it with English, as if they had observed us and learned. My Volplas were amazing. They were bilingual. Now, Jane and Susie went down to Santa Barbara for a week, and I took the opportunity to ship the male and the oldest two females out of the lab. I put them in a jeep beside me and drove to a secluded valley about a mile back in the ranch.
Tree, 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 rock, sky, sky, sky.
That's right, Chief. That's the sky. All right, come on now. Everybody out. Run, jump.
Jump, jump, run, 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 sky.
That's right. Take off. Go ahead. He spent about 2 hours chasing the two girl Volplas around, and then he made a leap for one. And when he spread his arms, his spars snapped out, and those golden planes sheared into the air. He sailed over her, and he rose up, and he hung in the breeze for a long moment, 3 feet above the ground. That's right. You can fly. You can fly.
Oh, fly. Fly. Fly.
They learned quickly and brilliantly. They were not really flyers. They were gliders and soarers. Before long, they took agilely to the trees and launched themselves in beautiful glides for hundreds of feet, banking and turning and spiraling to a gentle halt. Oh, I laughed out loud with anticipation. Wait until the first pair of these is brought before a sheriff. Wait till the newspaper reporters are routed out into the hills to witness this. When they were tired, the Volplas lay on their backs with their planes stretched out. The oldest one came over to me. He squatted, his elbows resting in the ground, his wrist crossed at his chest.
Before the red men, we live here?
That's right. In places like these, you lived all along these mountains. Now there are very few of you left. Since you've been staying in my place, you've naturally forgotten the ways of living outdoors.
We learn again. We stay here?
That's right. Now look. Look, you see up in that tree? That's a bird. That's your food, if you can kill it.
How?
Well, I don't think you can get at them in the tree. You'll have to soar up above and catch one of them on the wing when they fly away. Go ahead, try. Climbed the tree and launched himself and caught a warm updraft on the hillside. In no time, he was about 200 feet away. He began working his way, crisscrossing back to us, and then suddenly he dived. He caught the bird! He caught the bird!
Bird! Bird! Bird! We eat!
Yes, yes, you eat this. I'll show you how to build a fire. Again, I told them the story I had made up, how they came long before the red men in a ship from the stars. I taught them to point to the planet Venus and say that was the star they came from. I grinned to think of the many stories that would be written in the Sunday supplements. Oh, what a great joke I was playing on the world.
We came from a star before the red men. From a star?
Yes, yes.
The next week, I brought all the Volplas out to the Oakwood. There were 107 men, women, and children. By the end of the week, they were scattered over 4 square miles of the ranch. They hunted sparrows and cooked them over tiny fires. The little creatures delighted me more and more. For hours, I could watch them play. I could sit all afternoon and watch them at work in a treehouse, quite forgetting to go home.
Well, how does the mighty hunter who now returns from the forest?
Fine. Oh, I've been enjoying the local animal life.
So is our daughter.
What do you mean?
She has 2 of them up in her room.
2 what?
I don't know. What do you call them?
I went up the stairs 3 at a time and burst into my daughter's room. There she sat in her bed, reading a book to 2 Volplas.
Hello, Beth. King Arthur.
What's going on here?
Well, nothing, Daddy. We're just reading like we always do.
Like always? How long has this been going on?
Oh, weeks and weeks. How long has it been since that first time you came here to visit me?
Weeks and weeks.
But you're teaching them to read.
Oh, of course. They're such good pupils and so grateful. Daddy, you won't make them go away, will you?
Oh, Jane, why didn't you tell me such a thing like this was going on?
Now, you listen to me, mister. Your whole life is a secret from us. Just what makes you think your daughter can't have a little secret of her own?
Oh, fine secret. Didn't it occur to you that this might be dangerous? Those creatures are...
Oh, Max, for heaven's sake, they're sweet, lovable little creatures without a harm in their furry little bodies. Now, don't get excited.
Chief! Chief! Look, where are you?
Here, Bush!
Listen. Listen. Do you realize there are 2 Volplas in my daughter's bedroom?
Yes. They go there every day. Is there anything wrong with that?
But she's teaching them the words men put on paper.
Yes. You told us men may be enemies. We wish to learn so we can protect. I have Bing here.
Well, that's the San Francisco Chronicle.
We've been taking it for some time from Box at your house.
Oh.
I have learned from the others. I can read most of this.
It was terrible. The whole wonderful joke of the Volplas would be lost. But I knew what I would have to do. I'd have to explain that my family and I had found a colony of them in our ranch and taught them English and taught them to read. I was stuck with that.
Men are dangerous. They will shoot us with guns if we leave here.
No. Now listen. When they know who you are, they'll leave you alone. Now, you must disperse all your families at once. Send them far away and spread out.
No, we cannot leave these woods. Men would shoot us.
But I'm telling you...
Perhaps you are not a good friend. Perhaps you have lied to us. Why are you saying we should leave these woods?
But it's important. The whole... I mean, you'll be safer.
We will decide.
The whole thing was critical. It could be disastrous. I went back to the house and up to Susie's room. I found her talking to 2 Volplas.
Oh, no. I'm sure you didn't come from the stars. That doesn't sound right. The more I think about it, the more I'm sure that my father made you.
Susie, what business have you telling them that? I don't want you talking to them that way, do you hear me?
Daddy, you want to play a joke, don't you? Like the time you said I could have a horse for my birthday. You gave me that dried seahorse in the bottle instead of a real one. Were you going to make that kind of a joke?
No, now. Now, Susie, honey, that isn't exactly it, no.
I don't think it's very funny. The Volplas are my friends. I wouldn't want to play a practical joke on them.
Chief! Chief, where are you? Chief! Oh, confound it. The fires are out. None of them around. Chief! Are you up there in that treehouse? Where are you? Where are all of you? You've got to listen to me. I made you. The joke, the whole joke is spoiled. Where are you? Chief! Volplas! Volplas!
was away from the house for hours. When I came back, I found Jane sitting on the terrace.
Are you looking for something, dear?
Oh, never mind.
I suppose they're all gone.
What do you mean?
The little flying thing. I saw them fly by about 4 p.m.
You did? Where did they go?
Over that way. You could see them soaring over the trees. Oh, it was so pretty.
Well, where's Susie?
She's been watching television. She's all excited about the rocket flight, you know.
What rocket?
Oh, you have been living in the woods. The Venus rocket. My goodness, it's been in all the newspapers. Well, where are you going?
I've got to talk to Susie. Susie!
Shh, Daddy, the rocket's almost ready to go. Listen.
It approaches 0 hour now. The rocket stands tall and silvery. The gantry crane is pulled away now. We're actually at least 5 miles away, watching from the remote monitors. Some disturbance now. It seems to be some birds. Big birds, like a flock of owls circling the ship.
Oh, Daddy, look!
Hey, wait a minute. They're flying through the hatch. It seems to be jammed open. This is certainly an unforeseen development. The men on the ground are driving a motor-driven ladder up to the ship, and the owls seem to be fighting them off. Oh, there goes the hatch. It's closed. Those birds are inside. They're big birds, big as eagles. As we told you previously, ladies and gentlemen, the rocket is on automatic fire. It'll go off in precisely 10 seconds.
We stared at the television screen. We saw the red blast of fire and the silvery rocket streak up into the sky, the cameras following.
Our reporter at scientific headquarters reports that none of the rocket telemeters are recording. The owls who blundered into the open hatch in this heartbreaking accident seem to have disrupted the automatic recorders. The control circuit cannot be altered. The rocket will land on Venus as scheduled.
Daddy, those weren't owls, were they?
No. No, they weren't.
Owls? He thought they were owls. That's kind of a joke, isn't it? Isn't it a joke, Daddy?
I say, Max, dear, the joke's on you. Wait till men land on Venus and find Venusians with a legend about their great father in California.
Of course, they left me a note. The handwriting wasn't very good, but then you wouldn't write very well either if your index finger was 9 inches long. I sat on the patio and read the Volpla's farewell. It said, "The man who made us, we forgive you. We know we did not come from the stars, but we go there. I, the chief, give you welcome to visit. We will try not to laugh at you. Goodbye."
X-1 has brought you Volpla, a story written by Wyman Gwynn and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in our cast were Nelson Olmsted as the scientist, Anne Petoniak as his wife Jane, Adele Newton as his daughter Susie. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by George Voutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production. We pause now for station identification.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
Horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the Ray Bradbury story entitled, And the Moon Be Still as Bright.
The first three expeditions for Mars left Earth in a mushroom of flame, arced through the atmosphere, and finally dwindled to tiny specks in the big eye of the Mount Palomar telescope. Men were lost to sight forever. The prearranged landing signals flashed back to Earth, and then the radios went dead. One after the other, ships had disappeared and were never heard from again. But still, the rockets came. The fourth expedition emerged from the silent gulfs of space, angled down toward the floating red disk of Mars, down into an orbit as the order came to land. The last blast of the bow jets broke red against the blue desert sands, and the ship slid to a halt at the edge of a vast city that reflected the icy glare of the moonlight. For a while, all was still.
All right, Parkhill. Open the airlock.
Aye, sir.
Fresh air.
Hey, it's cold out here.
Who cares? We got here. I thought I'd never hit solid ground again.
Hey, how about a fire, Captain Wildey? It's freezing.
Later. We have work to do.
Oh, smell that air.
Why, you could get drunk on it.
Say, there's an idea. Why don't we break out a bottle of Alibrate?
Biggs, there will be no drinking done until we're secured.
But we're landed, Captain.
Three other expeditions landed and disappeared within 24 hours. Now, we're not relaxing security till we find out what happened to them.
What do you mean? Maybe Martians?
Sender, you're an archaeologist.
How old would you say they are?
I can't tell till I study them more closely. It's the kind of engineering we couldn't duplicate on Earth.
Well, I'm not interested in the architecture now. I want to make sure there's nothing there that might be dangerous. Mr. Hathaway.
Yes, sir?
I want you and Spender to take a reconnaissance party into the city and find out what's there. We'll set up camp here. No man is to go more than 50 feet from this rocket. And there'll be no celebration till Hathaway and his party report back.
In the sea bottoms, the wind stirred along faint vapors. And from the mountains, great stone visages looked upon the silvery rocket and the small fire. The sky was black overhead, as the two racing moons threw knife-edged double shadows on the desert.
All right, come and get it, Chow.
Hey, what do you got there, Jackie?
Soda smothered in cold chicken fat.
Good, I thought it was something I couldn't eat.
Hey, Captain, Mr. Hathaway's back.
Oh, Captain Wilder.
Oh, yes, over here, Mr. Hathaway.
Well? Most of the city's dead. Spender says it's been dead a good many thousand years, but we found one part about a mile over.
What about it?
People were living in it last week, sir.
People? Martians. Where are they now?
Dead.
We found bodies, thousands of bodies. They hadn't been dead more than 10 days.
What did they die of?
You won't believe it.
What killed them?
Chickenpox.
Chickenpox?
Yes.
Where could they get chickenpox?
From Earth.
Oh, then the other rockets did get through.
Yes. I don't know what the Martians did to them, but I sure know what they did to the Martians. They gave them chickenpox and wiped them out. They just didn't have any resistance to an Earth disease.
Think of it, Captain. A race builds itself for a million years, refines itself, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies.
Of what?
It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps or the proud Roman Empire collapsed because of athlete's foot. We didn't even give them a decent excuse for dying. We just gave them chicken pox.
Spender, get hold of yourself.
You didn't see those bodies, Captain.
Yes, I know. It must have been a shock. You need a rest, a little relaxation. The Martians are dead. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Hey, you hear that? The Martians are all dead. Come on, let's break out a bottle and hoop it up.
Hey, hey, hey.
How about a case, hey?
Oh, good Lord. They have to do that now? Isn't there time later to throw old beer cans into the canals?
Bender, you're an idealist. They're not. All they know now is that they're safe. A little shouting won't hurt. You think too much.
I was safe on Mars. The first Earthmen on Mars. We're going to celebrate. Yahoo!
Twenty bottles were opened and drunk. The voices got louder. The earth laughs and shouts echoing across the empty Martian sands. Spender listened to the wind over his ears, cool and whispering. He felt the land getting cooler. The stars grew closer, very near. The air smelled clean and new. He looked at the cool ice of the white Martian buildings over there on the empty sea land.
Oh, oh, what a woman!
Hey, what do we do with these empty bottles?
Save them, stupid. There's a 2 cents deposit.
Throw them away.
Hey, wait. How about that building? 2-1 on a buck. I can heave one right through that window.
You're up.
All right, here goes.
Bullseye!
Hey, double or nothing on the next shot.
Put that bottle down, Biggs.
Who's there, Mr. Spender?
Stop smashing those windows.
What's the difference? The planet's ours now. I guess I can do anything with it I want.
Drop that bottle or I'll knock your teeth out.
Yeah? Hey, just watch me.
I warned you,
Biggs.
Come on.
What's going on
here? Spender! I hit him.
He's crazy, Captain. He just walked up and slugged me.
All right, Biggs. Spender, you come with me. Now, suppose you explain. What was the idea?
The noise, the drunken brawl.
Friend, the men are tired. This has been a long trip. And you have a different way of seeing things.
Oh, I'm seeing things all right. I'm seeing how we'll ruin Mars. We'll rip it up and rip the skin off the way we've already ruined Earth.
Is that why you hit Biggs?
Yes. I couldn't stand the idea of them watching us make fools of ourselves.
Damn.
The Martians. They're dead. They're all dead. But they know we're here. Doesn't an old thing always know when a new thing comes? We've come a long way to smash their windows and spit in their wine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I'm still going to fine you $50 for that fight. Now, come on, Spender. Suck in your chin. We'll go back there and play happy.
Now they moved out into the moonlight across the desert. They made their way into the dreaming, dead city. The light of the racing twin moons glinted on the barrel of a pistol, the long blade of a machete, the round, gurgling shape of a raised bottle. The wind blew in from the dead sea bottom and brushed through the silvery wire filigree of the towers. Strange music drifted down to the double-shadowed streets, a thin, haunted music that played as it had played through the uncounted years of time. Nobody moved. The moons held and froze them. The wind beat slowly around them.
Hey! Hey, you people in the city!
Biggs,
I just want to make a little noise. What kind of a celebration is this, anyway?
Come on.
They built this city thousands of years ago. And now where are they? How do they die?
Who cares? They're dead. That's good enough for me.
Lord Byron.
What?
Lord Byron, a 19th century poet. He wrote a poem that fits this city. Might have been written by the last Martian poet. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, though the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath, and the soul outwears its breast. And the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood in the center of the city. It was a clear night. There was not a sound except the music of the wind. At their feet lay a tile court, worked into the shapes of ancient animals and images. They stood there, silvered by the double moons beneath the crystal towers of Mars. And then Biggs was sick, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. And Spender turned and walked away into the city, alone in the moonlight. never once stopping to look back. It was a morning that might have been a Monday, or a Tuesday, or any day on Mars. Biggs was on the canal rim, his feet hung down in the cool water soaking, while he took the sun in his face.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Biggs? Didn't you go out with the search party?
Yeah. I come back. I got a blister.
Oh, yeah. Here.
What do you mean? Look. Look, Jack, you see that? Anyway, I had enough searching. 4 days hunting for that screwball Spender.
Didn't find him yet, huh?
Oh, good riddance. Oh, my feet. I'm going to soak them in the canal. If I was wilder, I wouldn't worry about that nut Spender. Let him go. He's a crackpot anyway.
Well, he's a little foggy upstairs, I guess. Hey, why don't you take your feet out of that canal, Biggs? I got to make coffee out of that water.
Coffee? You call that stuff coffee? I had a motorcycle once that dripped grease that tasted better than...
Hey, wait a minute, Biggs. Hey, look over there.
Where?
By that bush. There's someone there.
Hey.
It's him.
Hey. Hey, Spender.
Spender?
He's coming over.
Why'd he stay lost, that crazy jerk?
Hi, Spender. Long time no see.
Hello, Cherokee. I've been exploring some ruins.
Oh, you and them ruins. You're like a dog in a boneyard. What's the matter? Why don't you just say something? Where you been?
Up in the hills. What would you say if I told you I found a Martian?
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Never mind. Let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you were a Martian and people came to your land and started to tear it up?
Well, I know how I'd feel. I've got Cherokee blood in me. My grandfather told me a lot of things about the way they kicked the Indians around in the Oklahoma Territory. If there's any Martian around, I'm all for him.
How about you, Biggs?
They're dead. They're all dead. It's a good thing, too.
Well, I found a Martian. Up in a dead town in the hills. I've been reading their books, and they're easy to understand. And I've learned their language. And then I found this Martian. And I brought him here, now.
I don't see no Martian.
I'm the last Martian.
What did you say?
Biggs, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, cut it out. What kind of a lousy joke is that? Now, don't put that gun away. You're kidding, huh? All right, Spender, you're... Ah!
He's dead. You killed him.
You can come with me, Cherokee. You're an Indian. You know how the Martians would feel. You can be with me in this.
You killed him. You just killed him.
He deserved it.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But you can come with me.
Come with you for what? Go on, get out of here, crazy murderer.
Of all of them, I thought you'd understand. I thought you'd remember what happened to your own people.
You get out of here, you crazy murdering...
Don't reach for that gun.
Spender.
Hathaway, break out the arms locker. Issue pistols, rifles, and grenades.
Yes, sir.
And you'd better get the Bible out of the navigation chest. We have to bury these two. Well, Parker, you start digging a grave. Hmm?
How about Spender?
We'll have to go up in the hills and find him.
Just let me at him with my bare hands, crazy murdering louse.
That's enough, Parker. Man is sick. He must be.
Sick my eye. He's
enough. Now grab a shovel and start digging.
Spender saw the thin dust rising in the valley, and he knew the pursuit was beginning. The sun burned farther up the sky, and the blue sand drifted lazily across the sea bottom below. He sat beside a quiet pool 10,000 years old and held the silver book. Through the house played the strange wind music of ancient Mars, and he heard voices whisper in his mind.
I hear you. I've always heard you, even down there on Earth. No, I won't run. What's the use?
Live,
what for? To see them tear down your temples and put up hot dog stands? They've seen me now. They know I'm up here. There's Wilder now. I've got them right in my sights.
Choo-choo.
Funny, he hasn't ordered them to use grenades. They could lob one right up here and blow me to bits. Maybe the captain thinks I'm too nice to be blown to bits. He wants my death to be clean. Just one bullet hole in me, nothing messy. And why? Because he understands me. The only one in the crew who ever did. Well, at least I can do the same for him. Just one bullet in his head, a nice clean death. All I have to do is pull the trigger and... It's no use. I can't do it to him.
Spender! Spender! Can you hear me, Spender?
I hear you, Captain. What do you want?
Talk! Truth!
All right. Come on up. Leave your gun down there. Keep your hands up.
That's quite a climb. You mind if I sit down? How long do you think you can hold out?
Until you're all dead.
Why didn't you kill all of us this morning when you had the chance? You could have.
I know. I got sick. When I started killing people, I realized they were just fools and I shouldn't be killing them, but it was too late. So I came up here where I could get angry again.
Why did you do it?
When I was a kid, my folks took me to visit Mexico City. Now, always remember the way my father acted, loud and big. And my mother didn't like the people because she thought they didn't wash enough. I can see my mother and my father coming to Mars and acting the same way. Anything that's strange is no good to us. We aren't fit to take over this planet.
But to kill two men.
How would you feel if a Martian spit on the White House floor?
You know, you haven't acted very civilized yourself.
I'll kill you all off, Wilder. That'll delay the next rocket 5 years, and then I'll kill them, too. And if I'm lucky, I'll live to be 60. And I'll meet every expedition that lands on Mars. Oh, I'll be very friendly. I'll explain our rocket blew up one day. And then I'll kill them off. I'll save Mars for half a century. And by then, maybe the Earth people will give up.
And yet you're outnumbered. We already have you surrounded. In an hour, you would be dead.
I found an underground passage that'll take me back in the hills, Wilder. I'll go back there. And then I'll pick you off one by one.
We'll see. Well, it's a nice town you've got here, Spender. It's beautiful. I'd like to live here.
You can. Join me. You're not like them. Why go back to them, Captain? I'll show you what a good life these people had.
No, there's too much Earth blood in me. I may even agree with you about all this, but that does not change what I must do.
You won't stay?
No. This is your last chance, Spender.
Look, you're sick.
Now come along with me quietly.
No. One last thing. If you win, do me a favor. Try to see that they don't tear this planet apart.
Right.
And if it helps, just think of me as a very crazy fellow who went berserk one summer day. It'll be easier on you that way.
Now I'll think that over. So long, Spender.
Bye, Captain. Good luck.
The men spread out again, walking and then running on the hot hillside places where there would be sudden cool grottos that smelled of moss and sudden open blasting places that smelled of sun or stone. The men ran and ducked and ran and squatted in the shadows. Captain Wilder hugged the rock warmed by the sun. He gasped, for the air was thin and not meant for running. Spender lay at the top of the hill, and a gap in the rocks showed the white of his shirt against the shadows. Wilder looked at the towers of the little clean Martian village, like sharply carved chess pieces lying in the afternoon. He saw the rocks, and the interval between where Spender's chest was revealed.
Go on, Spender. Get out. You only got a few seconds to escape. Go on, get out of the caves. Come back later. You go now. I've got to win this. I've got to think that I'm right. Pull this trigger. Go now. Get out.
I'll get him! A slug in the head! I'll blow his bloody brain!
No, Parkhill! Put down that gun! I'll do this myself.
Spender. Why didn't you get out? Why? Why? Why?
They buried him in that ancient valley town, where the music of the wind played on through the days and the nights. They laid him in an ancient silver sarcophagus with waxes and wines which were 10,000 years old, his hands folded on his chest. The last they saw of him was his peaceful face in the cold silver light of the racing twin moons. The captain found the poem in Spender's pocket, and he read it before he shut the marble door.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, and the moon be still as bright. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
The next afternoon, Parkhill did some target practice in one of the dead cities, shooting out the crystal windows and blowing the tops off the fragile towers. Captain Wilder caught Parkhill and nearly knocked his teeth out.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you the Ray Bradbury story, And the Moon Be Still as Bright, adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Clark Gordon, Dick Hamilton, Nelson Olmsted, Lawrence Kerr, and Stan Early. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Thank you for downloading this VintageRadioShows.com podcast. We have over 25,000 shows for you to download and enjoy, with membership starting at only $6.95 per month. And now VintageRadioShows.com offers FTP access to make collecting your favorite shows quick and easy. Please visit us at VintageRadioShows.com.